Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst, from swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guesthouse overlooking the Pacific Ocean. The Foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to support the conservation and restoration of Hearst Castle while offering youth programs for underserved students. Discover how you can become a member by going to foundation@hearstcastle.com and learn how you can support this unique and invaluable mission.
I left my heart in San Francisco. High on a hill.
I'm your host, Tom Wilmer. We're at the KCBX studios in San Luis Obispo, California, and I'm here with Alex Scott, a resident of Oakland, California, but an immigrant from Canada. Eh?
How's it going, eh?
Going good. You are a full-time professional writer, unlike a lot of people that freelance part-time after work and whatever.
Sure.
So it's a double struggle because you have to make your income and get your assignments or...
Yeah, I was at the CBC in Canada, and when we moved down here, I sort of added some teaching and became a fellow who said yes to editors and cobbled together enough writing work to make it worthwhile.
I remember Smithsonian is one of your regular outlets.
Yeah, I write for them and sometimes for The Guardian, and I've written a lot for the San Francisco Chronicle, mm-hmm. and San Francisco Magazine and yeah. Sunset. And then
Toronto Magazine, right?
Yeah, I was a lawyer, and then I left that to my journalist friend said I was crazy to join the staff of a city magazine called Toronto Life. But I found my people. I was so happy. Mm-hmm. Not that lawyers weren't my people, but I was so happy to be with all these crazy journalists again. So,
did being a lawyer serve you well as being a wordsmith?
Well, not really, but I always liked to write. I worked on the college paper, and I was a libel and slander lawyer, so I was working with journalists. But it gave me some discipline that I sorely needed. So, you know, A to B to C, following every lead, like good journalists are supposed to do. Mm-hmm. So it was helpful in that the writing, I have to try and turn off the lawyer
right.
side to write a bit.
So. But that craftsmanship as a writer... It probably some parallels. If you don't dot your I as a lawyer, you might lose a case.
Well, there you go. Yeah, for sure. And one of the reasons I went into law is that there's an overlapping skill set with argument and putting together thoughts. But some lawyers are great writers, and many are not as good. So.
Back in the day, you guys got paid by the word.
Yes, that is true.
So kind of a reverse going on there because you want to be tight and concise.
Absolutely right. Yeah.
So in addition to writing for magazines on assignment, you are also an author.
Yeah, in COVID, I took a novel that had long been in the drawer and worked on it and got that published by a small, reputable publisher. Mm-hmm. And that was great, a long time dream. And then I was asked if I would write a book on San Francisco by a publisher in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. And they've done a series of books called Oldest Chicago and Oldest New York. And they cut this interesting swath through the cities where they talk about the businesses that have survived and other things that were pioneered in different cities. I wasn't doing as much travel writing as I'd been doing before COVID. And so when they approached me, I said, hell yes, I will take that. Thank you. So,
yeah. And you can probably spin off a lot of those stories, right?
I hope to do some of that. They'll probably excerpt a couple of local publications will probably do some excerpts.
So. Well, SF Gate, the online platform in San Francisco, would seem a total natural.
They do beautiful work on San Francisco history. And in fact, a lot of the times when I was researching something, I would come up on a beautiful story about the oldest diner, and someone had grown up going there and he'd written about it for SF Gate or that sort of thing.
So the name of your book is?
Oldest San Francisco.
Uh-huh. Get right to the point.
Yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm. We tried to get stuff that was very San Francisco. I went to see the oldest blue jeans in a vault at the Levi's History Museum. Mm-hmm. I felt like I was seeing seeing the Shroud of Turin coming out of it, and worn by miners. This was important to me. I saw the first rainbow flag, which had a couple more colors, which was in a lesbian and gay history.
So that's where it was invented.
It was by this Vietnam vet called Gilbert Baker.
Uh-huh.
And he was sort of airy and funny. And Harvey Milk, the famous supervisor.
Who was murdered.
Murdered and asked him for one of the first what they called gay freedom parades. It was not called gay pride yet. Would he come up with a symbol or flag for them? And he, having come from Kansas, knowing the over the rainbow, and anyway, he came up with this rainbow flag, and it was lost for many years, but then found after he died in 2019 and returned to this museum. So it was nice to see that. So,
that's really cool.
Yeah.
How about some of your, on the one hand, the iconic places, the Presidio and whatnot that everybody knows. On the other hand, surprises that you bumped into.
Yeah, well, I loved following with the Presidio, following the history through Spain, a sort of dusty fort where they sometimes paid people with like cigarettes, right at the end of the Spanish Empire, and then through Mexico, where it got even more neglected, and then through being conquered by the U.S. Without really any shots fired. And then what was nice was the sort of swords into plowshares, how it became this beautiful, almost Central Park-sized park area. Mm-hmm. And then as the book was coming out, they had made a new part of the park accessible, sort of connecting the park with the famous cemetery of many of the war dead in World War II. So it was nice to see layer on layer on layer of San Francisco in a place like that.
And how about discoveries, surprises that you bump into that you had no clue?
Well, somehow across my feed came this piece from an automobile trade magazine saying that one of the oldest auto shops in the nation was started by a Sicilian immigrant to San Francisco called Babe Aliotto.
Is that the Mayer family?
They're all from Sicily, and they all are nice to each other. Not related. Although I interviewed the grandson of the founder, Babe, and he said when they went to the restaurant, they were treated great. And the mayor, Mayor Aliotto, one of San Francisco's most famous mayor, gave them a coin when they were born. So yeah, they started by doing Packards, and they would have this huge Christmas party every year, and the cops would come to bust it, but then would end up staying. And they moved from, of course, doing all mechanical work to doing all these incredible computer-driven cars, the Teslas, and they've made all the adjustments over the years, like all these businesses, to stay fresh. And so what I loved about that was I thought, you know, I'm going to be writing about Tadich Grill, writing about Ghirardelli, the oldest chocolate maker, writing about all these iconic things, but I didn't realize I'd also get to write about oldest funeral home or oldest auto shop. So that was fun.
And you wrote about the oldest sourdough bakery.
Yes.
That goes back to the Gold Rush.
Gold Rush, yes. French immigrants. Coming from Canada, I always want to say Boudin,
right,
but it's Boudin, the way locals say it. And locals used to put a nail on their door so that the deliveries made by wagon, they could just push the loaf onto the onto the door. Yeah. And of course, San Francisco has a famous sourdough story where the yeast in part comes from the air. And then with Boudin, they have something they call a little creepily the mother, which is their starter. Which, of course, during COVID, everyone was talking about starters. But this one was used from the Gold Rush on.
And it's still living.
It's still living in a sort of cool area. And it almost died in the earthquake. Boudin was hit hard.
1989 or the 1906?
1906. It feels, but yes, the 1906 quake, everything in their bakery, it was okay from the quake, but then the fires, the resulting fires were moving towards it. And the wife of one of the master bakers, who also worked full-time in the bakery, as was common, had the forethought to grab the starter and put it in a pail and take it with her. So it's the same starter that's been with them from the beginning.
Can you get a little pinch of it to make your own?
You cannot.
No.
People have tried to reverse engineer it and so forth.
But that's the magic of their sourdough.
That's right.
Irreplaceable. You can't fake it.
That's right. And they've done amazing, as is typical in San Francisco, they've moved with the times. So their bakery is state of the art now, and they sell it all over in the airport and all over. But it's still the same sourdough.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Okay, another favorite that really touched you that was surprising and revealing.
I love digging into the story of the, this is more food, but I guess that's appropriate with San Francisco, such a food-obsessed place. But who started this global success, the Mission Burrito, which started in San Francisco in the Mission and then went global.
When did they start?
In the 60s. Uh-huh. But there are two origin stories. Two different places claim to have invented it, and both are still around. And so one claimed that they were serving hungry firemen in the early 60s, immigrants from Mexico, but had made it as agricultural workers in the Central Valley. Mm-hmm. And the other claimed that they had to make the special large tortillas that, as you know, if you've eaten them, they're quite substantial. So the other one's claim is that they were the first ones to make these, a cousin of Carlos Santana, a high school student, every San Francisco story has to have some Carlos Santana,
sure,
in it,
yeah.
Was the first to make the extra large tortillas to go. And
are they brick and mortar now, or are they food truck?
They're both brick and mortar.
Where are they located?
One is on Valencia, which has become quite a sort of hipster street, but they're the real deal, mm-hmm. La Cumbre. And then the other is at the other side of the Mission. If they were closer, it might be even more difficult. And it's called El Faro, the lighthouse. And most food historians side, I'm sorry to say, with El Faro. But anyway, they both had a role in making this local dish go national. And one thing I loved there, one of the people I spoke to who has a taqueria said, the Mission Burrito, not the melting pot, should be America's story. Because you have all the ingredients. You've got the beans, you've got the rice, you've got the avocado. And they're all themselves, but they're in this one big burrito. So I thought, oh, that's nice, right?
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Okay, another favorite story, kind of a must-do if you come to the city, places you can see and experience.
Yeah, well, I always thought as a visitor to the city that Alcatraz would be so touristy, and of course it was. You had to book a long time in advance, but it's really held on to some feeling what it was like. There, the tunnels that people use to try and escape are there. The lighthouse still turns above it. The remnants of the occupation by Native First Nations people are there. The bridge tables where they played near a picture window looking out at the bright lights of the city, all that freedom sort of visible. So, you know, it was nice to dig into the mystique of the rock and to sort of piece everything together in a way that was reliable but quick. And so, yeah.
And some fresh perspectives.
Yeah, hopefully. You know, there was the oldest hat shop.
All the oldest are still going.
They're all still going. The city had one very sad loss while I was writing it, which was the oldest art school in the west of the country, the Art Institute, which is a storied building, a storied place. Annie Leibovitz learned to photograph there. All these amazing talents came from there.
And what happened? Why did it implode?
Well, I hope that there's still going to be some sort of savior or saving of it. A small school having a difficult time paying their bills. They looked to try and partner with another university. That didn't work. And so a city like San Francisco, there's got to be someone with deep pockets who is going to say, I'm not going to let this go, not on my watch. So,
as I remember, drove by there the other day, and it's like a French language school now?
Yes, they've rented parts of it out. But, you know, there's a huge, almost barn-sized room in there with a mural done by Diego Rivera dramatizing the building of a city like San Francisco and making fun of plutocrats. And it's just a beautiful, massive piece of art. Mm-hmm. And at the back, there's sort of this modern addition to this.
Is it like a fresco so you can't move it?
It is a fresco. They have all the technology to move it, but it's incredibly expensive, so they might have to do that. But in place, it's magic, and the building is great. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I'm speaking about what's not in the book, but passionate about that. So,
Okay, one more.
Okay. I guess there's a longstanding funeral home run by the same family since the days of the Gold Rush. It always reminded me of one of my favorite shows from the 90s, Six Feet Under. The family who run it have run it since the early 20th century. I spoke to a couple of them, and they estimate that they've put in over 300 years between them all, trying to help people through this very difficult process of losing a loved one. And so many logistics are involved, paperwork and finding the service and so forth. Mm-hmm. But one of them, she talked about how great it was to be able to be at the other end of the phone for these people and just listen and hear them out and handle the logistics. I was expecting that to be a really difficult interview to think about it, but I was thinking, wow, in this circumstance, I would love someone who had a calling to do this work, as she clearly did.
So. Well, looking from the outside, your first thought is, well, they prepare the body for burial.
And they do all that.
But there's so much more, like the quote mortician might be like social director and not having to do with actually preparing the body itself.
Yeah, and dealing with the authorities to report on it, or, you know, she was talking about someone who wanted their ashes to be taken to China and how many different people needed to be dealt with, and she sort of helped them walk through all that. Yeah. So lucky them to have found the right person. So,
okay, before we go, one more bonus. This is so fascinating. Think of another tale.
Oh, well, there's a motel on Ocean Beach. It's the oldest motel in San Francisco from the time when we were building all the highways, so the 20s, or building the roads, and we were taking longer road trips, 20s and 30s. They were young when they inherited this, a couple. He was an artist, and she was a dancer and had worked in diplomacy. Her father unexpectedly died, and they said, on sort of a lark, we'll do this. And they had amazing stories of being held up, which were out of Tarantino, sort of Ocean Beach a bit rougher then than it is now. And the way they told stories was one bouncing to the other. And so the man holding them up points a gun at them. They're in the office. She's doing yoga, and he's at the front. And he recognizes the gun. He's a bit puzzled, but then he always tries to figure out, are they crazy or is it business? If it's business, we'll just give them the money. And if they're crazy, then we're in trouble. And so he realizes it's business. So the guy comes in, and he says, give me all the cash in your safe. And he says, I'm a hippie. I don't keep cash around, the guy who owns it. And then he says to the woman who's still in yoga pose, where's your purse? And she wants to get him out of there. So she says, oh, you know, I think it's out in the car. But her husband, who's always a helpful guy, is like, oh, no, you just left it over here, right over there. And he's like, she's like, ah. So the way they told that story and the slice of San Francisco life, I just loved getting the chance to talk to them and sit with them and hear about it.
So. That's so cool. Okay, Alec, Scott, to learn more about your world and your upcoming book, how would somebody get the book and learn more about you?
Well, I guess my website is alexscott.com. The oldest bookstore in the West, Books Inc., is offering the book through their website. There are pre-orders there, and those ones are signed.
And the name of the book again?
Oh, it's Oldest San Francisco, and its site is oldestsanfrancisco.com.
There you go. Probably on Amazon and whatnot.
It is on Amazon, too. But those ones aren't signed. Only the Books Inc. ones are signed.
But it's not published quite yet?
October the 1st is the launch date this fall.
Okay, that's awesome. I can hardly wait to see a copy.
I'll send one down.
Yeah, I love it. Alec Scott from Oakland, California, thank you so much.
Thank you, Tom. This has been great. Thank
you. Yeah, no, it's fascinating. I can hardly wait to read the book. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from the KCVX studios in San Luis Obispo, California, where we've been visiting with Alec Scott, author and world traveler.
Thank you.
I left my heart in San Francisco.
Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst, from swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guesthouse overlooking the Pacific Ocean. The Foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to support the conservation and restoration of Hearst Castle while offering youth programs for underserved students, preserving the past and inspiring future generations of dreamers. These children experience a world of science, technology, engineering, art, and math at Hearst Castle, STEAM, along with studying the legacy of Julia Morgan, one of the most important women in the history of engineering and architecture. The Foundation at Hearst Castle not only changes the lives of children, but also provides lifetime memories and unrivaled experiences for our generous donors and members. Discover how you can become a member by going to foundationathearstcastle.com and learn how you can support this unique and invaluable mission. You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station. We'll shine.